I believe our final guest is Jean-Marc. He's just at the back there. Jean-Marc is our VC guy. So we've had scaling startup, we have 18-month-old startup, and now we have a legend of the VC space. Jean-Marc, welcome. Do you want to introduce yourself to the room and tell them about your venture fund?
I see that the picture was not taken yesterday.
Oh. I don't know. I think you look exactly the same.
Some gray hair.
Nothing wrong with gray hair. That's experience.
Yeah. Okay.
So welcome, Jean-Marc.
Okay. So a quick introduction on myself.
Please do, yes.
Okay. So I'm an engineer by degree. Basically spent all of my life in a small triangle in between Paris, Versailles, and you know, that big plateau of Saclay when I graduated two schools over there. But at the same time, always I've always worked with you know, international partners, especially with the US. I remember that my first deal as a VC when I was really young, I mean something like maybe 28, was done almost randomly in a Californian startup called Wonderware. And actually, we did something like 22x on that first investment.
That's a good start.
And that's where I learned that VC is definitely a play of luck versus anything else. It was a time where basically you were doing your due diligence by calling. I mean, no, the only thing that you had besides calls or telephones were barely fax,
right,
and telex, and that's it. I mean, no internet. It was not in the 19th century. I mean, it was like...
Well, I remember it, so don't worry, you're not alone. So you've been in VC for the whole time since then?
Yes, I mean, since 1991, to be
right.
Correct.
So what's the biggest difference that you see? If you go back to 91 to now, what do you think the biggest changes in VC land have been for you?
Well, again, I think that now VCs pretend that they are doing great returns because they are smarter than the others, where I think this is still about luck. Having said that, I think there has been a kind of progress, I mean, in the way we deep dive in the different verticals. I remember when I started, it was about, you know, doing VCs in health tech, in drug discovery, as well as software. And, I mean, now things are definitely more complex, and you have to specialize. You have to specialize. So doing so, because you're specializing, you have to pretend that it's not only about luck, but also about industry awareness, and also the valuable inputs that you can bring to a company.
So you're at Partech. Tell us a little bit more about Partech, and do you have specialisms within Partech?
Yeah, at Partech, what we do is dealing with ones and zeros, anything that is digital. That's why we're still covering health, but from a very tech perspective. So that goes from AI applied to certain verticals to impact industries like recycling, fintech. I mean, the list is long. I mean, it has to relate to ones and zeros, to digital.
Gotcha. And
we are doing so in Europe, in the US, in Asia, Southeast Asia, and Korea, and Israel.
That's an interesting mix of different geos, and knowing them a little as I do, they're very different. So do you see, let's pick Israel and France, yeah, as comparisons. Israel, startup nation, you know, one of the things about Israel, necessity is the mother of all invention, right? So when you are being bombed by your neighbors, the need to build security software and high levels of, you know, weaponry and things like that becomes a really important thing. Equally, they have conscription. So every person goes into Israeli military and they learn a ton of skills that perhaps are quite transferable into startup land. So one of the things I see about Israeli startups is that it's the DNA of the country almost. What do you think between, say, somewhere like in Israel and France, are there key differences that you see, or perhaps something that's unique about France that makes French entrepreneurs actually have something a little bit different than, say, an Israeli?
I like very much doing deals in Israel, actually. And after that Californian company, the next successes I managed to invest in were actually Israelis. In some aspects, the Israelis look like French. It might seem weird to you, but they do have that sense of, that Mediterranean culture. Both, I mean, Ashkenazi and Sephardi. They do have that Mediterranean culture, that the way of addressing things, the way we do, that is not necessarily going direct, but, taking the time, socializing. You can start a meeting with speaking about your vacation, about philosophy. They would not mind. They would even appreciate. This is not something that you would do in the U.S. Besides that, of course, they have the chance of being stimulated every day, as you say. This is a fighting nation, and they have no domestic market. So their business fight has to be undertaken abroad. Mm-hmm. And it starts, as a matter of fact, it starts with the U.S. because common language, common country, 300 million people market and kind of diaspora network over there. They would like to do more deals in Europe, but it's more complicated for them because many languages, intricate maze of regulations and so forth. What we do at Partech is try to drive them the way of addressing as many European countries as possible.
And does Partech kind of invest in a specific kind of age of a company? Is it Series A, above, below, all of the above?
I can sign you a check of 200,000 euros, which is already a big sum, and we can go up to 50 million.
All right, so that's quite a broad range.
Yes. Yeah.
Is there a reason for that?
Well, we started by venture, and realize that to cover the full spectrum of opportunities, we had to go on earlier stage, and also to make sure that we can continue to support these companies on the long range, on the long term, we built a growth fund so that we have the free booth.
So let's assume, this is guy just carting along super fast on a thing, it just caught my attention. Particularly if you're looking at a 200,000 euro check, you're right, it's still a relatively large sum of money, but it's still at the point where the product is unproven or the business is unproven. So what do you look for when you're writing those checks? What is it that you're looking for in the team or the founders or the business?
We definitely cannot get the same kinds of KPIs and historical numbers, but basically we are still looking the same things as we do in venture and growth stage. That is a management chemistry, and we would have to cover many chapters to talk about that. But basically that passion, that vision, I mean, looking to the stars, but also able to hire and manage people. So down to earth, from the stars to earth. And again, we don't have KPIs on the graph, on the spreadsheet. But what we do have, or what we are still looking to double check, is what kind of market will we be in? Because basically, at the end of the day, there is a kind of convergence of objectives between the entrepreneurs and the VCs, is the value of the stock or the value of the share to make money, and for that you need. I mean, I'm sorry to say that it might seem a little bit dull or speaking like a book, but it's about market size. It's what will be your acquirer and how much is he going to pay for that kind of technology, for that kind of market. And it might be perceived as those VCs, they only think about money. But basically, this is our job. I mean, to return money to our investors. And basically, you won't build $2 billion or euros market cap company in snow sensors. Even in education tech, for instance, which is, a space that I like very much, it's difficult. I mean, to think of big acquisitions, like when you're starting a software company, whether it's horizontal, what we call infrastructure, or whether this is vertical, that is more like an app. Maybe you'll have 10 or 20 competitors, but you have 10 or 20 or 100 companies, corporates, that are each valued $100 million of market cap, that are potential acquirers. And that's why VC do more software than snow sensors.
Which makes a lot of sense when you look at it like that, I guess. If let's assume we've got a few folks in the audience who've perhaps never spoken to a VC before, what are some great hints and tips that you would give to early stage founders on how to approach having those first few conversations with a VC?
It's like an interview, so you have to make up your mind. What you have to expect from a VC is the Napoleon officers, that they are lucky. So sometimes it's not easy to double check whether they are lucky, but still you can look at their track record. Second, you have to have in front of you people that you feel will challenge you. That means asking the difficult questions. It might not seem comfortable, but then at the end of the day, which is what is bringing value on the table. So you have to get in front of you people that are challengers, on top of being supporters, on top of being advisors. And definitely you have to have in front of you a contributor. Mm-hmm. Someone that have, you're the entrepreneur, you're Napoleon, so you're on the battlefield, you're the captain. But the VC that you have in front of you has lived 100 battles or battlefields. So you will wear the medals on your chest as on your entrepreneurs, but we have many, many scars on our skin. And from that, we can share that experience. And experience in many fields, such as how to hire, access to talents, business development, M&As. I mean, it's very rare that a VC evoke potential M&As for its portfolio companies. They are thinking exit, but before doing an exit, you can build a bigger company and in a faster way in acquiring technologies or IP or more classic companies. So it's about exit, it's about M&As, it's about crisis situation. All of us have lived, tough crisis situation with syndicates, with unions, with state regulations, with, internal management crisis. So it's all that experience that you have to leverage.
Superb advice.
Which means that you have a lot of due diligence to do on your side.
Yeah. And on the whole kind of trying to find the right investor, and this goes for angel investment or seed investment or institutional funding like VC rounds, think of it like a marriage. This is not something that you're just in it for the money, because the money's helpful, but actually the rest of it is what you need to care about most. It's the partnership that you're going to build with that investor. What are they going to bring to that table alongside the money that's going to help you grow? And if, for whatever reason, the chemistry isn't there, don't do it, because that's just going to be painful for everyone involved. So I'm going to, final question for you. I'm going to twist it slightly, because you've given us a ton of advice already.
But before the question, it's a fantastic life, being an entrepreneur, because you can have many brides if you do.
Oh, I see what you did there. You went with a harem.
That's good.
I'm going to twist the question slightly for you, because you've been around, you know what you're talking about. If you were going to be a founder, if you're going to build a business tomorrow, what would you go build? Or is there a particular piece of technology that you think is super hot right now that you wish you saw more of? totally put him on the spot here, by the way.
Which space with vertical, which... It's... I will have to behave as an entrepreneur, successful entrepreneur, so it has to be something with a sizable market. It has to be a big highway versus a sideway. Probably on impact, on circular economy, recycling. And it's not only about, you know, being a new... what's the name of that Swede girl, you know, Greta Thunberg?
Greta Thunberg, yes.
But I really feel it.
It's such an obvious growth market at the moment, isn't it?
If there is one person on earth that is bearing a heavy responsibility on his shoulders to save the planet, it's definitely the VC. And of course, the entrepreneurs. That duet of VC and entrepreneur. They're on the front line. So we are on the front line.
Of course. Ladies and gentlemen, please thank Jean-Marc. Also, another round of applause for Guillaume and for Hillary as well.